Welcome to a new episode of the International Comics Collective, only on UCPN.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to a new episode of the International Comics Collective. I'm your boy, Al Mega, and I'm chilling with my boys from across the pond. First off, the man himself, Mr. Dave Elliott. What's up, bro?
What, me, Dave? Yeah, I'm here.
Awesome. And then, obviously, we have the boss of the comic book Twitterverse over here and fellow comic crusader that has been doing some kick-ass columns, Mr. Chris Buse.
Hi there, boys and girls. How are you today?
Yo. So happy to have you guys here today because we're going to talk something that's a little sad. Some news that had come out, you know, at the beginning, mid-June, early June, then, you know, going into July and all. We keep hearing things happening, and we're talking about DC's closing of Vertigo. Not just Vertigo on that day. They also killed DC Zoom and Ink. And then just recently, we had another announcement of Mad Magazine is going to cease publications. And this is something I think affects all of us because we have been fans one way or another of either product, both products. So this time around, let me start off with Dave here. And let's get into the Vertigo. And why do you think that they have chosen to, you know, cease publication of this amazing imprint?
I think if you look at the history of Vertigo over the over several years now, I mean, you know, even before Karen Berger left DC, you could see that it was only going to be a matter of time. You know, there was less and less titles. There was less and less support for those titles. I know a lot of creators who have worked on various Vertigo books over the years. And one of the things that they've always, you know, they've usually felt is generally there's a lack of support within DC Comics for Vertigo. That means that, you know, you don't get, you know, ads. There's not a lot of in-house ads for Vertigo books outside of other Vertigo books. So it's, you know, they're just not promoted very well. So I think it wasn't when Karen Berger left the company. I don't think it, by that point, it wasn't a huge surprise she was going, and I think it was kind of more a bigger surprise that, you know, they were making the announcement that Vertigo, they were going to keep going and they were going to reinvigorate it and they were going to put more effort behind it.
They were going to call it DC Vertigo, you know, in this new rehash of it, which didn't quite.
Well, the thing is, you know, so many people have, before it was, well, DC is DC, it's the superhero universe. Vertigo is, it's not a universe, it's a series of creator-led books. And that may have included, you know, they moved over things like Swamp Thing, Sandman, you know, Hellblazer.
Yeah, they moved that into DC proper now, but at that time in Vertigo, with just vertical properties, right?
Yeah. And they were kind of separate. They might crop up in Batman or a DC book, but they were very much the Vertigo books were very much in their own world. And there was no desire, unless the creators wanted to, there was no crossovers with anybody else's book or characters.
Yeah, Sandman had its universe and they would cross over. And then you would say Swamp Thing and Hellblazer at times would cross because, you know, Constantine came out with the Swampy books.
Exactly. But it was a creator led. So, you know, if the creator wanted it to happen, then it would happen. And they, you know, they still have it. Like you look at what they're doing now and there's a basically a Sandman line of books. So it's not part of Vertigo. It's just, you know, I don't even know what it's called. Is it DC Sandman?
Well, wait. When they did bring it back, they were trying to incorporate it into, just as a vertical book. But now we're going to see them apparently move into Black Label. So while Vertigo may die, at least in the Sandman aspect of it, they're moving apparently those titles over to their, you know, adult Black Label imprint. So let's see if that can continue. I hope it does.
But will the Sandman books again? Because there's going to be more than one. Because it's going to be that it's kind of a Sandman universe. So does that mean that there's going to be DC Black Label / Sandman universe / whatever the title is?
It's going to be a mouthful to say when you ask for it at your comic shop.
Well, I think the from what I've been reading from the interviews that Dan Dio and Jim Lee have been doing, it sounds very much they're taking everything as being, you know, instead of having Vertigo as a line, Zoom or anything else, everything is going to be a like a pop-up store. It's that, you know, when you go to the mall and it's, you know, the everyone's going to start moving, starting to go back to school, you suddenly see the store or that stand in the middle of the mall that's selling calendars. Or the shop that opens about the same time selling Christmas decorations, and it's just selling Christmas decorations until, you know, January 1st. And then it closes down and something else pops up. So I think that might be the attitude now, which is, well, we're going to pop some excuse, we're going to do a line. And when it's done, it's done. And it closes and goes away. And so it's not going to be under Vertigo. It's not going to be under anything else other than DC something or other. So it's just lots of little pop-up stores. And they just, it's like, you know, when you know, that expression of like you throwing, you know, stuff at the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah. I have a question. I want to read a comment from Didio, actually. Mm-hmm. And I would love to gauge Chris's view on this and then you. All right. So this is, you know, touching on what you were saying about their plans. This is from Dan Didio. He goes, "We're returning to a singular presentation of the DC brand that was present throughout most of our history until 1993, when we launched Vertigo to provide an outlet for edgier material. That kind of material is now mainstream across all genres. So we thought it was the right time to bring greater clarity to the DC brand and reinforce our commitment to storytelling for all our fans in every age group. This new system replaced the age ratings we currently use on our material." Because, you know, they're going to go, I guess, color kind of labels. What do you think about that? And this kind of idea of them bringing DC into, I guess, just one family again.
Well, it's basically how they started. I mean, if you go back how Vertigo started in 93, he's right about 93, of course. But I've just opened on my screen the first issue of Hellblazer, Hellblazer number one, and I remember buying this book. And this book came out in 1988, and as Steph said before, and you said before, John Constantine, originated with Swamp Thing in the 80s. And he got his own book within the DC universe, but he was outside. And on the cover, you see what they did. They said suggested for mature readers. And that was the big thing at the end of the 80s, or already started mid-80s, that they would say, okay, we have the direct market. We can put out books that don't have the comic code. We put the label on them, and we say, okay, this is for a more adult audience. And I'm sure they must have seen that people were picking up these books. So eventually, they decided 5 years later to give these books their own imprint, to make it even clearer to the reader, okay, this is the adult stuff, this is the edgier stuff. We have all this creative talent from the UK, and this is where this goes. And there was a market for that. We had a market. I remember clearly at that time, I got tired by these superhero stories, always the same. There was no adult stuff in there. They stopped at the level of 15. That was interesting for a 15-year-old, 16-year-old, but there was nothing. They didn't explore darker themes. They did so, of course, with the Miller books, and they did so with the Alan Moore books, but it stopped at a certain level. And with the Vertigo books, you got the more adult approach, more challenging approach, more interesting approach. There was an audience for that. But the thing was, I always felt that these, at least at the beginning, that the Vertigo books were like underground books. They were like the stuff you could buy from the UK, like Warrior magazine mm-hmm. or 2000 AD. There was a darker bend to them. And I think what the problem today is with Vertigo, and as you said, the writing has been on the wall for a long time, but I think the writing has been on the wall for a long time is because these books are too edgy, and we don't want this anymore. Because that today, if you put out an edgy book, we talked about nudity in comics and the debacle with the Black Label and the Batman book, showing a little bit too much nudity. This yeah. created controversy. And as a publisher, you must make a decision. Do you want this? Do you want to have a discussion about certain themes in social media and in media in general? Or do you want just to put out your books and sell the middle of the road? And I think this is where DC is going. I think DC is basically middle of the road. They say, okay, we don't want to have anything that's controversial. We don't want to have any edges to them. Yeah, we sure have these Black Label books, but I've also seen some idea that they want to bring it back into the DC universe proper. Scott Snyder's doing a book. Everything is going to be toned down. Everything is going to be very tame. And it really feels that we are getting to the point where, around 1955, after The Seduction of the Innocent, which came out in 1954, but we are coming to a point where we're in media, in art, in general, we don't want to have anything that's offensive to anybody. And this ultimately will lead to the death of art in general, and it will ultimately lead to the end of DC Comics. And I think in a few years, there will be no DC Comics anymore. And this is the first step.
Because I think they're gonna probably release their IPs. I'm starting to see Marvel, and I'm pretty sure DC's gonna do the same thing.
Yeah, and they will all be all ages books. They will be for 12-year-olds or for 11-year-olds. There will be no outlet anymore for edgier things. Not in comics, not in mainstream comics, and even Image is toning down their things. And Image was like the second coming of Vertigo, if you will. They picked up when Vertigo, let's say, lost its luster. And ultimately, when Karen Berger left or was terminated, let's be honest there, Image really got going around 2012. But times are over. People, you put out a book today as a big publisher that has the stuff in there that's in Hellblazer number one. If you go back to this first issue by Jimmy DiLano, if you put out this book today, which is very critical of Thatcher, which is very political, mm-hmm. there would be outcry on social media, and immediately they would say, okay, it's not worth it. Let's do this.
I have a perfect example for you of a recent debacle within Vertigo, and it was that book, Second Coming.
Yeah, sure.
That got picked up now by Ahoy Comics. Mm-hmm. They said, okay, we'll take it if DC don't want it. And why didn't DC want it? Because a couple of Christians didn't like the way that they were showing Jesus in the comic book.
Exactly.
So, yeah, you hit it right on the mark. You know, there's too much sensitivity out there, and the sensitivity is going to kill the art form.
Well, you have to – there's a more important part, which is you have to look at the origins of some of that sensitivity. So,
I understood, too, of course.
Well, it's corporate entertainment now. It's corporate. So it's not – it's not an independent company. It isn't Image. DC can't do the edgier stuff of, say, Avatar. And it goes all the way back, even when Swamp Thing was being done by, after Alan Moore left, Rick Veitch took over, and there was an issue where he had Swamp Thing meeting Jesus. And the issue was finished, but it never saw print.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's always been there. There's this, everyone wants to push the envelope until it gets to the edge. And then it's like, oh, no, pull it back. And what DC is suffering from is the whole move to Vertigo, the whole more mature titles, was DC's reaction to companies like Eclipse. It was suddenly that there was a home for creators like Alan Moore, because you know, Alan was doing superhero comics because that paid a paycheck.
Yeah.
But he wanted to move foot forward. And a lot of other people were in the same way. It's you know, yeah, I love Batman. I love Superman. I love The Flash. I love Spider-Man or whatever. But ultimately, you saw that as a way of getting your name out there. And now I can do my own thing.
Exactly. That's all that Warren Ellis tells it. He basically said the only reason he did superhero comics was to get his name out there. And then he did the stuff he really wanted to do.
Yeah. And you even have, like, Warren will do it. Neil Gaiman does it. Every now and again, they seem to sort of like, there's that point where, oh, I think I've lost a few Twitter followers. Let me just go back and do another superhero comic.
Yeah, they want to raise their brand awareness. And this is why Warren Ellis will do 6 superhero comics, not series, comics a year, and that's it. So he stays in the game, but then he does his own stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, and see, that's the thing, though. It's, with DC Comics, it was, well, let's do mature books because we don't want these creators to leave. And what they thought they could do is, it takes me back to, and this is like Warner Brothers as an entity. So when they were doing the Lethal Weapon series of films, they did 3, and the 3 films had done very well, and they wanted to do a 4th one. And Mel Gibson just didn't want to do it. It was like, mm-hmm. No, don't want to do it. Don't want to do it. However, there was a film, and a fairly low-budget film, that Mel Gibson actually wanted to direct and star in. And Warner Brothers said, well, I'll tell you what. We will fund that, distribute that. We'll let you do that if you do Lethal Weapon 4.
Oh, damn.
That film was Hamlet, and he and he then went on to do Lethal Weapon 4. Now, DC's approach was the same. Well, as long as we can get sort of, you know, a couple of miniseries from Alan Moore out of DC Superheroes, we'll let him do his own thing. We'll do his own thing. But you've got to do, it's got to do 1 for us, 1 for you, 1 for us, 1 for you, or gotcha. 2 for us and 1 for you. And that was their attitude. They thought, well, we'll keep them. They'll still do some stuff for us, but even the new stuff they're doing, they're going to be creating new stuff for us. Great, but more mature.
Yeah.
And because you look at the success of Dark Knight and Watchmen, they thought, wow, this is definitely the way to go. And what they didn't realize is that it was almost a coincidence that Dark Knight and Watchmen came out at the same time. And when you really think about it, those were like lightning in the bottle. They tried everything. They thought, you know, oh, you've handed in a Batman script. Oh, this is very good. Hey, make it a little bit more edgier, and we'll do it as a hardback graphic novel instead. And we can sell it for $30.
Mm.
So that's what they tried. They thought that that was the way forward. And as the material started to go towards this edgier material, and then you launch the, and then, you know, it was getting towards, you know, they're doing Sandman, they're doing books, they're planning to do Sandman and books like that. Hey, let's have an edgier imprint for all these guys. So there you have Vertigo. But the problem is that Vertigo was really, it served a great purpose at the time, because DC Comics was superheroes. It was, as Chris was mm-hmm. saying earlier, hey, you know, up until you're 15 to 18 tops, I mean, you know, really it should be, you know, if you're like, really, comics should be 6 to 18. That's what DC and Marvel should be doing. Over that, you would have Vertigo. Or, you know, if Marvel had kept it going, they could have had Epic.
Yes.
And that would have been great. But they didn't. What they did was they started aging up, and the maturity of all their titles, and they started all these mass continued stories, and then, you know, it was the age difference of the readership between the DC Comics and Vertigo became this. It was like, it was the same now. There was like, you know, mm-hmm. the everyone was buying it, it wasn't, you weren't moving from hey, I'm going to drop Superman and Batman because, you know, it's like I'm a bit old now. I'm going to switch to Sandman. It's like, no, I'm still buying Superman. I'm still buying Batman and I'm buying Sandman and Preacher as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that that was DC kind of lost its relevance for needing Vertigo, but it also lost its relevance as being its core audience for superhero comics.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, superhero comics should be all ages material. And stuff like, you know, when Garth Ennis does The Boys or Rick Veitch does Brat Pack, you know, those are those exceptions. Or, you know, Alan Moore's obviously Watchmen, but, you know, those are the exceptions. But, hey, yeah, do your superhero comics, and everyone can read those. And if you want to do something else, let's do that in a different format for a different age group.
I want to say something here, because this definitely involves the topic here. It's a comment that Karen Berger had made when she found out that Vertigo was closing its doors. And, you know, I'm just going to quote this. It's a, you know, a full comment, but it's just the first line. Let's see if you guys agree. Her first line in this is, corporate thinking and creative risk-taking don't mix.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, never have.
Absolutely true.
And no more so than DC Comics and Warner Brothers.
And that is the ultimate fallacy, because basically if you look, we talked a few months ago, we talked about Endgame, and there was a lot of discussion. Oh, Endgame will top Avatar as the biggest movie. Well, they came a little bit short, and then the discussion started. So if Endgame can't do it with all this massive hype and everybody and their mother wanted to see Endgame, and if they still can't get near Avatar, let's be honest, Avatar is a few years old, so we need to adjust for inflation. But so they failed really, really hard at getting to Avatar. So if they can't do it, if Avengers 2 can't, Endgame can't do it, the sequel to a massive movie, then what can? And the question is, not another superhero movie, because in the next years there will be no superhero movie bigger than Endgame. So what will top Avatar? Another movie like Avatar, which was an original, let's say it was a little bit stolen from other ideas, but basically it was an original movie. And they've mentioned it, The Dark Knight. And they tried to copy it, but it was The Dark Knight because it was original. And the problem is, if you do not take any risks anymore, you can basically close the house, because basically you will never have another Dark Knight. But it's the Dark Knight that will move you ahead for the next years. And if you do not do any risk-taking, if you don't put out original stuff, and Vertigo was a great, great area where you could do original stuff, if you don't do this, then why are you in the game anyway? If you just repeat what has come before, if you just want to stay on the safe side, if you do want to do the next Superman story, which is like the Superman story before, why are you even in it? Why would you write a Superman comic? Why is Bendis interested in writing a Superman comic if he can only do it in a certain confines? I don't understand him. Because he started with independent comics. He was very original when he did his first Marvel stuff, when he did Jessica Jones. And then he started to do middle-of-the-road stuff, because they gave him the Ultimate Universe to play in. He did his most successful work as Ultimate Spider-Man, you can argue. But then, basically, everything is middle-of-the-road. There is no risk-taking. There is nothing new. And therefore, if you don't invent something new, I mean, if you can go to every industry, if you only put out cars, and if you put out cars that are like the past before, ultimately, you will not be successful in the market. And we see it, sales are down because people want the next big thing. And if comics is not going to deliver the next big thing, readers will leave. They will go to someplace else.
Yeah. Yep. Well, don't forget, James Cameron, don't forget, see, Avatar was James Cameron. This is the guy who did two fantastic Terminator movies, Titanic. He proved that he can do more than one thing. It's like, wow, he's the great sci-fi genre guy. What? He did Titanic? Like, that's... That, mm-hmm. So...
That movie pissed me off, Titanic. It won that year for Best Special Effects for Academy Awards. And that's the year the Starship Troopers came out. Are you crazy?
Right, but see, the thing is, though... So, what I will just say about James Cameron's Avatar is... It's James Cameron's Avatar. It's one. It's a writer-director who had proven himself on the two Terminator movies, had shown what he could do with something like Titanic, and then created an entire new universe with Avatar. And you didn't. There was nothing you had to see before it.
Absolutely true.
And it was fantastically well promoted. So people were going. So that meant anybody. And so if you think about how well Titanic did, that massive audience. So anybody could go. It had a well-known cast. But here's another thing. Even if Endgame had done the same numbers as Avatar, let's take a look at it. So as far as a financial model, all they would have had to boast about was how much it took.
Mm-hmm.
When you think that Robert Downey Jr., his payout on Endgame was $75 million.
Yes, ridiculous.
So that's just him. So if you can imagine the entire cast, the directors, the writers,
Jesus,
Kevin Feige, all taking their cuts. Sure, Disney still made a hell of a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not making as much as 20th Century Fox made on Avatar.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And do you think Robert Downey will get another big payday if he does in fact come back as an AI in the Riri Williams movie that they're talking about?
I don't.
Did you even hear that they're going to do an Ironheart movie, Riri Williams? And if you've read the comic book, there was a point where Tony was an AI. And now they're talking about bringing back Tony as that AI.
Well, they're never going to do that movie. I mean, there's always a lot of talk about what they will do or not do. And they're also playing the marketing game. And this is also to take away a little bit of the backlash, because there was some backlash against Endgame because his daughter was white. And why they didn't put Ironheart in the movie. And this is just Disney playing the media game here. They're never going to do that movie.
All right, I want to mention another thing here. I found this tweet from Jim Lee, okay? And he ends this tweet with a kind of almost, it sounds like a guarantee. And I want you guys to tell me whether or not you believe him, all right? So he goes, our decision to rebrand all content under the singular DC imprint is just that. Amazing books that will comprise the Sandman universe, as an example, will continue. Big plans for year two. YA, pop-ups, and creator-owned comics will continue to be a big part of DC. This is the line that now, this is the last line here. You tell me. He goes, no books are being canceled or going away. I don't believe that for a second.
Not for a second. This is just spin. I mean, it's really not, I'm not even reading this, because this is, the thing these guys put out, Jim Lee, they are all spin. And I'm really not that interested in what they have to say as corporate speak. I don't really.
What did they have left to cancel?
What do you mean?
Well, they canceled the Vertigo line, but by the time they canceled the Vertigo line, what was actually left of it?
Well, four or five books, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was
all going to be transferred into under Black Label.
Yeah, out of the 7 Vertigo books that were announced for the for its rebranding when it happened, right? Out of those 7, right? Obviously, one is in Ahoy, all right. Mm-hmm. Another one, from what I understand, is called Safe Sex, which was supposed to be published on the Vertigo, is now going over to Image, and Border Town, which was one of the first ones of this rebranded Vertigo that came out, got canceled immediately because Eric Esquivel was caught up in some type of controversy, sex and whatnot.
So that leaves
4 titles But which four titles are we talking about now? Because I don't see them listed anywhere. So Vertigo would have been left with four titles essentially. But what, you know, and then Sandman didn't really. I don't think it did well when it came out with this rebrand. You know, Sandman Universe. I mean, it looked beautiful, but did it sell? I don't think it did. You know,
I think the problem really is that DC, as it is right now, they don't really know what they're doing. Because was it a year ago that they announced Black Label as the new big thing? And this is now basically non-existent anymore. I mean, it was supposed to be its own thing. And now it's also part of DC Universe proper, or more or less coming out as a regular book and not in the prestige format anymore. What was the deal with that? I mean, it's we try something. Oh, there's trouble. There's controversy. Oh, let's not do this.
Yeah,
and this is not how you sell books. This is not how you sell books.
Listen.
You need to lean into the controversy. That was the problem. I remember this so clearly. In 2011, when they put out the new 52, they got everybody excited. Mm-hmm. I bought like 30 books from DC every month in the first few months because they were all interesting.
Yeah.
And there was some great stuff there. There was not only Scott Schneider's Batman, but there was this Lemire did Animal Man, Mr. Foreman. That was a fantastic book. That was really felt like Vertigo and really outstanding material. And then, even then, there was pushback from social media. There were parents group complaining, meaning basically five people assuming to speak for everybody. There was a whole issue of Catwoman, completely drawn by Julian March. A fantastic issue, I've seen the pages, and they canceled the issue. They started to bring all these offbeat characters they had introduced into the proper DC. They colored the books differently. They made them all superhero books, and that was basically the end of the New 52. Instead of saying no, we decided to do this now. This is our way forward. We want new readers. We want to keep new readers. There are people complaining. Let them complain. You don't like what we're doing. Here's more of that. Go on, complain. And this way, you create an awareness to say, wow, there's a company that wants to give their creative talent an outlet. Yes, these books are offensive. I don't have to buy them, but other people might.
Exactly.
And this would have been the way forward.
See, that's the whole thing. You know, now that they want to do this Black Label, right? And obviously one of their first books was Batman Damned, and obviously tons of controversy because you saw his wiener.
So what?
And then what bothers me here, the book is labeled mature content, right?
Exactly.
And DC didn't have the courage to stick to by their guns, and they called it a production error.
No, well, look, here's the thing.
Get out of here, dude.
Here's the thing. And it. I will tell you, I think the core of it lies in, I've been in enough Hollywood meetings when there's certain keywords that are used.
Yeah.
And when they're used, everyone goes, oh, yeah, let's do that. But I guarantee you, every single person in the room has a different thought in their head to what that word means. And when people start saying, yeah, let's make it edgy.
Gotcha.
Everyone goes, yeah, let's do that. And you're always going to have someone, like, you never say, like, if you say to Alan Moore, make it edgy, he's going to go, oh, fuck yeah, thank you very much.
But, and we're going to get something crazy out of that for sure.
But there's a lot of people who go, oh, yeah, I can make it edgy. But all those people that decided that we should make it edgier, when the stuff comes in, everyone's going like, oh, whoa, I said edgy, that's way over the top. And there's somebody else going like, oh, really? I thought it was a bit tame. See?
That's
the problem. And so when I can guarantee you there's, you know, Marvel and, you know, I can imagine sort of Dan and Jim talking to the Warner execs going like, yeah, no, this Batman, damn, it's going to be really edgy. It's going to be like, and they're going like, oh, wow, yeah, love it. And when they see, and when they were, you know, going to push the envelope, and of course, it's like, you know, there's Bruce Wayne's dick, and all of a sudden, it's like, oh my God, you can't. What are you doing? Well, that's pornographic. That's pornography. No, take it out.
Was that the first appearance of the Batwiener?
Yeah,
I believe it was.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, crazy stuff. People react over wild stuff, man. It's drawn. Men have this tool in between their legs. It's natural.
But you see, that's the thing about comics.
And it's mature.
That's the thing about comics. Look, everyone wants, you know, more reality in comics. Yeah, make it more gritty. Okay. Well, in comic books, we never see superhero go to the toilet. We mm-hmm. very rarely ever see them just eat. Mm-hmm. And they almost never have sex.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which is very interesting, because basically I'm writing this extensive magnus opus about the Flash, going back to the Silver Age Flash, and you would be very surprised how near the end of the 70s, when the time was there, and you can read it all in my columns, they opened a series like the Flash, the Silver Age Flash, up to have really adult, not graphic, but adult material in there that was dealing with adultery, that was dealing with supervillains having sex. And this is something where you say, wow, they were doing this at the end of the 70s. You can see that they were laying the groundwork very naturally for going towards what you go. And they did this in superhero comics. And this is really, really interesting, I find. Because if you go back to the other topic we wanted to talk about, Mad Magazine.
Oh my God!
If you go, I counted Mad was huge in Germany in the early 80s, and when I read Mad Magazine, that was the Mad Magazine stuff they put out in the early 80s, and it was a little bit sexy, and they had a little bit stuff about relationships and so on, and they made these funny little parodies of movies, and only later in some comic shops I discovered Mad Magazine from the mid 70s, early 70s. Old issues, and it was a completely different magazine. It was a highly political magazine, very satirical, very critical of the government, very critical of social change, not in a negative way, but pushing it forward. And if you say, well, basically, they had a voice back then. They were really daring back then, and they were really pushing it. And there's lots of stories where the government or certain bodies of the government wanted to shut down magazine. And William Gates and Al Fechner fought them on it. They said, no, we're not stopping this. We want to be critical. And this is something that's missing from culture today. And this is why Mad ultimately, they closed it down, yeah. But they have been toothless, tame for many years.
Yeah,
nobody's interested in this anymore. The problem is, if you want to sell books, you need to do something new. You need to do something bold.
Exactly. And it's like, if you look at National Lampoon magazine, it was the same thing.
Oh,
it was
wow.
On the same principle.
Bringing me back to my childhood here.
Yeah, but I will tell you, on Mad magazine, there's some interesting story is that, so up until, I think it was 91 when Bill Gaines died.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we were on that time, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it was interesting. I'd met him about 6 months before he died.
Wow, you got to meet him.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Well I met him because I was in talks with Bill to publish Mad Magazine in the UK.
Oh, word!
Okay. Wow.
Now here's what I found out about Mad Magazine that to me explained, and I found out later exactly why Mad Magazine was so well known in the 70s and 80s and going into the 90s and then dropped dead. So what happened was, this is how Bill Gaines used to run Mad Magazine. So the conversation I had with him was like, so what I'd like to do is I'd like to introduce, I don't want to just reprint Mad Magazine in the UK. Yeah. I'd like to actually add new material to it. And he goes, that's great. He says, I do that in every foreign edition. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, really? He said, yes. He said, here's usually how it goes, he said. So if you're in, you're the new publisher. So year one, I usually ask you, you have to use 80% of the material from my edition in the US,
mm-hmm.
but you can add 20% of your own material.
Okay, fair enough.
Year two, it goes to 60-40. You have to use 60% of my material, and then you can use 40% of yours. Year three, it switches to 40-60, so you only have to use 40% of my material, and you can use 60% of yours. And he said, and at any time, you can use as much of mine as you like. But if you want to add your own, you know, I don't want you to use too much of it right away. So I was like, okay. And he said, and in the end, he started telling me about a lot of different editions throughout Europe and around the world where they used no material from the US edition. It was original. So I was listening to what you said, Chris, about being sexy and things like that. There's a good chance that a lot of the stories you were reading in Germany in Mad Magazine were just for your market. Mm-hmm. Because the thing that Bill Gaines knew and understood, which most Americans do not, is that American humor doesn't travel.
Exactly.
Every country has its own form of humor.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah.
Like, I understand the Brits have a very dry humor.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very, it's dry humor and fart jokes, and that's all you need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I enjoy it, but it took me a while. I get what you're saying, because it took me a while to appreciate the English style of humor. You know, being born, you know, in PR, but raised, you know, American values. So, it definitely took me a minute to warm up.
I think every single country has its own, because it's formed in a different way. The way, people have had lots. Some countries have been through the war. They had a lot of suffering. It took a long time to recover. So it would be a lot of dry humor, a very dark humor sometimes, not always light. So he understood that.
Mm-hmm.
And now, when he died, the first thing that his agreement with Warner Brothers, who distributed Mad Magazine, was they technically owned it, but he controlled it and did whatever he liked with it. His agreement was on his death, they take it over.
Mm-hmm.
DC Comics took it over, and every contract, as it was being renewed around the world, was canceled.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was renewed, you had to use just the US material.
Exactly.
So within a space of a couple of years, they effectively killed Mad Magazine. And so it was already dead back then. And it was just...
That's the thing that Bill Gaines understood. It's the theme of relevance. You need to be relevant in your market. And this reminds me a lot of when Walmart came to Germany, they opened their stores here and they put in all the American private label brands. After a few years, Walmart was gone from Germany. Germany, they failed completely because Germans don't buy products they don't know, and they didn't give a shit about Walmart's private label. And just to give you an idea about relevance, I was talking about political relevance. Mad Magazine had in the 70s. In the 70s, Mad Magazine monthly sold 6 million copies.
Yep.
In 2017, Mad Magazine was published bi-monthly, and they sold 140,000 copies. Because what they put out was not relevant. It was not connecting with the audience. And that's the problem. That's the problem we see in DC proper. And the irony in all this is basically if you go to the history, when DC or Warner basically bought Mad Magazine and they put it under DC, it was Joe Orlando who became president of DC Comics. Joe Orlando, who had been with DC Comics from the start, who knew what this company was about. Instead, he was not allowed to do this thing proper. It's interesting, isn't it?
Mm. In fact, when I mentioned it on Twitter, someone came back to me and said, in I think it was 2012, they actually allowed. I think it was somewhere. I think it was the Netherlands. They tried to relaunch Mad Magazine with homegrown material.
Okay.
But the problem was, it had completely lost. Everyone had forgotten it. It was completely lost. It had no relevance. The name brand had disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
See, I want to touch back on something how Chris was saying the importance of Mad in a way, you know, of being loud. And this is a line from one of the articles I found. And it basically says, though silly, the magazine had a serious mission to encourage readers to think carefully and skeptically. The editorial mission statement has always been the same. Everyone is lying to you, including magazines. Think for yourself, question authority.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Why do you think that mission statement was no longer relevant now?
Oh, it's not relevant. It is relevant.
It's not relevant.
It is relevant.
It's relevant, of course.
But just Warner Brothers and DC Comics aren't going to be the company to actually fulfill it.
That's what I meant. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay.
So you think just the corporations themselves don't have the courage to do this just because
it's not courage.
Any type of backlash.
Because
I mean,
look,
you have balls to do things, man. It's like you know, like you were saying, this guy, you know, Warner Brothers owned it, but he was going to do what he wanted with it up until his death. Meaning, you know, taking control of something and just doing it, you know, hey, let people complain, like Chris had said, but, you know, let people also see how it ends. So that way, hey, there's a story here, stop complaining, we're going to get to a cool point, you know?
But think of it this way.
Go ahead.
Sorry, all I was just going to say is, look, Warner gets control of Mad Magazine. Now they think, great, we can promote all our movies, because what we're going to do is, we can have our movie, or whatever movie we're releasing that month, we'll do a parody of it and we'll put it on the cover of Mad Magazine, and like, it's great promotion. The problem being is that you don't want to insult the director of that movie. So the first script that someone writes, and it could be really cutting, like it could, they've seen it already, they've seen a sneak shot of it, or they've read the script, and they realize it's awful. So they're making a completely, like, they do this really cutting parody of it. Well, editorial's now like, oh, no, we can make it funny, but we don't want to be cutting, because we want to promote this movie at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're caught in, you can't actually, see, this is the problem when corporations take over, like they buy brands up, and they think they can just merge them into themselves. Something like Mad needs to be able to cut. They need to be able to cut anything that Warner Brothers do to the bone.
Yes.
They need to be able to eviscerate it. And if they can't, and they're not allowed to, then you failed it, and you failed the readers.
The thing is, there's a comparison. If you think about all this corporate thinking, I remember this very vividly when McDonald's came to Germany in the early 80s. That was the big thing. Oh, McDonald's, we saw that in American movies, great thing. Today, if you go into a McDonald's in Germany, it's a ghost town. Because in the meantime, like in the United States, a lot of young entrepreneurs opened their own burger places. And they made it a little bit different. They made it a little bit more in line with what the young people want. And these German burger places are hugely successful. And McDonald's is a ghost town. And the same happened with Mad Magazine. The Mad Magazine in Germany was just a spoof magazine in the mid-80s. And all the political things were gone. In Germany, a lot of satirical magazines started. And they basically killed Mad Magazine in Germany.
Right.
And this is the thing. If you lose your edge, you will lose your market share. You will lose your readers. And this is why this closing down of Vertigo, and before that, the hollowing out of Vertigo and the fire current merger.
Oh, yeah.
This is basically killing DC. I have no ill will against Jim Lee or Danny Dio, but they do the best they can under the management of Warner and now AT&T. They do the best they can, I assume. But this is the way to ruin it.
Well, there is another thing that we should also talk about, which is, you know, some things have a purpose for a set period of time,
mm-hmm.
and it fulfills that purpose, and now's the time to pass the baton on somewhere else. Sometimes you can't artificially keep things going.
That's true.
So, you know, National Lampoon magazine, fantastic magazine, hilarious magazine. Where is it today?
Yeah.
All manner of different reasons why it failed to continue, yeah. but it was gone. Mad magazine. Maybe it should really have just. They should have just canceled it in the 90s.
Yeah, and just let it be. But you know, we're talking about Mad. You know, like it's going to be gone forever. For what I understand, several of the team members, if you will, of this last iteration of the Mad magazine that has gotten canceled, they've stated they have not gotten pink slips or anything to that effect as yet. Just news that, you know, the magazine is over, which leads them to believe that it may have life elsewhere. But as you guys are saying, if it's not pushing buttons, is it worth it?
Well, I'm sure, look, when I was a kid, not only was I buying Mad magazine, I'd buy, remember those small paperback Mad magazine books, Mad books?
Mm-hmm.
I was buying all of those as well. I'd buy them all. And I would just I'd love them. I mean, I'd read them so much that a couple of years later, I'd have to buy the same one again because I'd read the other one to bits or I'd lent it to a friend and never got it back. And I think if they were to do something like that. But again, I think the issue is more for today's audience. There's not been enough really good material being produced. So you really just want to do a bunch of archive material.
So you want to do an archive book. You think that a lot of this new generation may be able to catch on to some of those, you know, little bit of humor or what type of archives we're talking about? Because if you get into the deeply political archives from the Mad magazine that go back into the days of Watergate, for example, I mean, it was great, funny stuff. But do you think that this new generation may understand it?
Well, it's not just that. It's just the style, the pacing, the even just the humor being used to lampoon these movies. You know, because what they were doing is they were doing current jokes and dropping political jokes into those parodies. So they were making them very relevant. And as, you know, we as, you know, older readers, yeah, sure, give me a Mort Drucker collection. Give me a Jack Davis collection.
All right, collections. Now we're talking something different. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
That level hell to the yes, baby.
But those are more upscale market. Again, they're forgetting and the comic publishers seem to all do this, which is, you know, again, it's the cheaper material that enabled people to actually really get into it. So the newsprint Mad collections, Dave Berg's cartoon, Al Jaffe's cartoons, Sergio Aragone's collections. These were things, Don Martin. Oh my God, Don Martin! How could I, all of those. They had their own collections, and they were cheap, so you could pick them up and you could read them, and they were in the newsprint. But you didn't care because it was funny. It was like the Peanuts cartoon collections, and now we're all about, oh, it's got to be slick paper and like the, oh yeah, these like deluxe hardback books. Oh yeah, $60, but it's gorgeous. It's like, well, you're certainly not going to encourage a new readership with a $60 hardback collection on something they're not familiar with. So how do you, So unless you give it away for free on a website, are you going to put all of this? What would be amazing is if Mad Magazine said, okay, we're just going to throw all our magazine, our work up online. You can read all the issues for free.
Yep, and I've seen websites, that are got the okay. Like for example, Toy Fair Magazine, they did that. You could read every Toy Fair Magazine that ever came out for free.
Right.
So you know why not do it with this? You're absolutely right. And I mean, personally, I would love to see a collection of Spy versus Spy, by Antonio Proillas, Cuban expatriate. I mean, come on, they had a Cuban expatriate that was accused of working with the CIA. After work that he published was critical of Fidel Castro. And next thing you know, this guy's working on Mad Magazine. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
Think about that history and these stories of Spy versus Spy. Imagine, any little hidden meanings there of him being critical from where he came from. I mean, it's just crazy. But it's just very sad. This book came out in 1952 as a comic book before it went into magazine format, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. Once they went to that magazine format is when they really started pushing buttons. Otherwise, they were just a little spoof magazine. And it sucks.
Yeah.
They're talking about that in the 70s, Matt had over 2 million subscribers. Subscribers.
Yeah.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, you don't get those numbers nowadays. I mean, although I was impressed, we recently reviewed an advance of a book called White Widow, for an independent comic book, sold out with 65,000 books moved. I'm like, that's almost more than Batman.
That's great. That's great,
isn't it?
For independent book.
So that yo folks, you see, check out the indie market. There's stuff for you out there. When the big groups, big companies like a Marvel, DC want to take things away from you, believe you me, it's out there.
Well, when
look at Umbrella number one, the relaunch of Dynamite, it stands at 130,000 copies.
Oh my God! Look at that
for Dynamite. This is amazing.
Yeah,
but also look at you also have to look at the wider band of comics. So you still have like in the United States, you still have manga doing incredibly well. Manga is still doing really robust sales, still going strong. Like a lot of those titles are still getting titles that most American publishers would wish they had. Then you've got Scholastic, and when you compare authors like Renny Tilgemeier to Scott Snyder, there's no comparison. She outsells him like 10 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Comics and graphic novels aren't going away, but we become so fixated sometimes with just superhero comics that we think that that's the only market.
Yeah, or at least when people think comics, that's their first thought. Oh, superheroes. Like, no, guy. There's a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Guy or gal. You know, they mean not just the men out there. You know, a lot of people just don't know. It's a lot more than superheroics or, familiar character. There's the slice of life. And, again, things that will maybe challenge your belief systems, like that Second Coming book that Ahoy.
Yeah, but if
wait a minute. I want to blame you guys for the Second Coming. For what I understand, it was some European Christian group that had problems with it. So thank you, Europeans.
but if you consider what Dave has just said, then it's even more puzzling that DC would close down Vertigo. Because if there is another market to be had that is non-superheroes, then lean into this market. But this is not where the IPs are for movies. And that's why it's not interesting for Warners anymore. I think the only reason why DC is kept alive, DC Comics is kept alive, because it's an IP farm for Warners, and that's it.
Yeah. And that's all it ever was. I mean, it's from back when Vertigo was launched. If you go back and look at Marvel at the time, and if you look up all the awards like the Eisners and the Harveys, throughout that period, you'll see consistently DC kicking Marvel's ass in when it comes to awards.
Yes. Absolutely.
And critical acclaim outright, and deservedly so. But Marvel kicked DC's ass sales-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And as I think many creators have said this, so I don't think there's any one creator, but it would be, you know, many creators have said, like, yes, yes, that's right. Yes, I want an Eisner. I want a Harvey. Yeah, I wish I could eat it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because
it doesn't peel. It's not a chocolate underneath that.
Well, it didn't necessarily, they hadn't got that award because their book sold well.
Yeah.
Just a lot of people liked the people that did buy it were really liked it enough to vote for it. But, you know,
they didn't pay the bills at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think that was, I know a lot of people who worked at Vertigo and DC at the time, and creators. I know that through that period, it wasn't a major concern. Sales weren't a major concern. It was.
But I think you can have it both ways, and it worked for a while. If you go back in only a few years, there was the Loki book by Kim Jong. There was the Hawkeye book by Matt Fraction, David Iyer. These books got a lot of readers into comics. Were they selling gangbusters? No, but these books got a lot of attention. And I think there were people picking up these books who had not picked up a superhero comic before. And you can do this. And if you commit to it, it will be successful. The 10th iteration of Spider-Man with just another number one will not sell.
Mm-hmm.
What will sell is a book that doesn't say Spider-Man on the cover, but that's original.
Mm.
And you need to push marketing behind it, and you need to give it a time. And it will be the next Dark Knight. If you don't do this, you will never have a next Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, not everyone will be a Dark Knight, but you'll have enough to make it worth your while.
Exactly.
I want to ask you guys this, because Sergio Aragonés made a comment here, right? And I guess it does kind of go in line with what we're talking about right here. And wondering, you know, I think you may agree. He goes, everything is changing. They want to do it a new way. He said, speculating the magazine's future could involve quarterly issues, more online content, and other ways to reach an audience that views life through a cell phone screen. He says, and I quote, we are becoming a nation of viewers instead of creators.
Yeah, but that's just the delivery system. That's the discussion. We have more readers now that we have comiXology. That's just the delivery system. It all comes down to the content. Will the content connect with an audience? It doesn't matter if I read it on my iPhone or if I read it on paper. If the content is interesting, I will get it. If the content is not interesting, it doesn't matter if I can read it on my iPhone.
So just create good stuff to keep us hooked. It's bottom line.
Create stuff that creates an attention. If you don't get the attention of your reader, you will not sell books.
Exactly. I mean, don't forget, I always point to things, and I know it's very much an exception, but Rocketeer, Dave Stevens Rocketeer. We knew he was taking his time on it. It was slow. It was like backup strips here. We were waiting for an issue. It would take months and months and months, but we would wait. And because the quality of it was so good and it was fantastic, the wait actually increased sales, because in that period, other people would find that first comic or the second issue and would then buy the third. So, and he was just pouring. It was just so gorgeous. It was like, and you want it, and you didn't mind waiting for it. But I mean, if you treat everything like that, if it is creator owned, you're going to have so much better, longer lasting material. We're producing comics that aren't created to last. Like, you know, the comics being produced today, it's in such a high volume by Marvel and DC they're not real. It's really just they're just pumping it out as a stream. They're
yes.
not releasing something that's going to stand the test of time.
I think the lowest weekly releases I've seen from any one of those two publishers is maybe 16 books.
Yeah.
And the highest I've seen is about almost 30.
But the problem is really they are afraid of breaking any eggs. If you go back to Warren Ellis, came to Wildstorm, I think it was already in DC at that
yes,
time,
Wildstorm.
Or shortly after, and he worked on the Wildstorm book proper. And he found out that they only kept it around because the guys who read Wildstorm, they liked the characters. And he said, well, this is not selling. I want to tell a story that sells because I have a message and I want to write a story that sells. So he killed off all the characters, relaunched the book at the Authority, and said, I make it a loud and bold statement.
What a great
make something that has not been done before. We make it a cinematic experience. And you got Brian Hitch on board. And the Authority, the first 12 issues of the Authorities are fantastic.
Absolutely.
And they have stood the test of time because they're still relevant today because they are challenging the readers. And they were selling like gangbusters, as far as I know.
It's basically yeah. what the Justice League should have been.
Well, no, but you see, again, the Justice League should never have dealt with that type of material. The Justice League should be appealing to, you know, 10 to 15 year olds. But the Authority is the book that will go like, you know, I haven't read comics since I read the Justice League. Oh, really? Have you heard the Authority? No. Read this. Oh my God, this is fantastic. It's mm-hmm. it's what you need. It's the next level. It's the next level of Avengers. Next level mm-hmm. Justice League. And you know, you look at see when he was allowed to, like was it Mark Miller took over Warren on the Authority.
Mark Miller, yeah.
Yeah, and a few other people have. Because Warren didn't own it. But, you know, you look at Planetary, which is much more of a single vision.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's another great, geez, you guys are spitting out some great stuff.
But you see, but you see, it's a single vision, and it's, you know.
Yeah.
I mean.
But there's also this wonderful story of Warren Ellis, where basically he worked on Hellblazer. We talked about Vertigo. And even back in the day, he wanted to put out this one story. And DC said, well, no, it doesn't really fit into the current political climate. You can put it out, maybe make some changes. And he looked at it and said, well, basically, if you put it out under my name, with the changes you suggest, it's not a book by me, and he quit. And I think this is consequent.
Yeah. No, it's Warren's always been, you know, Warren stuck to his guns his entire career. From the very beginning, he's always been very vocal about what he wants to do, what he wanted to do. And, you know, that's it. You either want to publish Warren Ellis or you don't. That's what it boils down to. I mean, I would just go back in a big way. I think a lot of this, again, it stems from this tide of, you know, erasing Vertigo is almost like saying, oh, well, Vertigo, it sounds like we created that for more creative freedom. Well, we want to kind of erase that because we don't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's more, we are corporate now. So it's DC main, which is we own it. Mm-hmm. And yes, it is how they've always been. But when you look at how Marvel took over and dominated them, it was a creator-led business.
Exactly.
It became something else. But in the first half of the 1960s, it was a creator-led company. You know, it was like, obviously, like Jack Kirby was the main powerhouse there. But you've got Jack Kirby, Stan Lee, Steve Ditko. But then you had John Buscema. You've got people like Don Heck.
Gene Colan,
man, yeah. You know, even when people like George Truska came on, Gil Kane did you know, quite a bit. You know, it's, you know, it was a creator led business because the model that had been created for efficiency meant the creator dominated the storyline. There wasn't any time for, you know, 20 different editorial people to sit down and poke and prod an outline and then send it back. No, it was just, it was fresh. It was exciting. It was like pow, pow, pow. You didn't know what was coming out. Now they know what they're publishing for the next 3 years. Back then they didn't know what was going to be in the next issue.
Exactly. You know what? Maybe that's what made it fun. You know what I mean?
Exactly. It's kept it fresh.
Yeah. Well, it's that immediacy. It's that immediacy because, you know, that worked also with Mad Magazine. It was the relevancy of it all. Yeah. They would be drawing the strip 1 month. It would be appearing in the comic the next and would have jokes that were current about politicians, movie stars, what was going on in society, in a parody of Jaws or Star Wars.
Gotcha. I wanted to, you were talking about dominance, right? So obviously you're talking about the dominance. Let me check something. Let me see how last month was. My God, Marvel had 43.3% of the market share and DC only had 26.7%.
But look at the number of books Marvel put out.
Now we're going to look at that. Dude, Marvel put out 147 books in June, DC put out 71.
Yeah, there you go. So
insane market share because they over saturate the market. Jesus Christ!
But that's it's literally obscene. It's literally obscene.
Mm-hmm. We're looking at the top 10. 1, 2, 3, 4. Four of the top 10 books shipped by unit belong to Marvel. DC had 1, 2, 3, 4. Yep, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out of the 10. And then mm-hmm. Image shows up there as well. Yeah. with The Walking Dead. But right, wow, market share, oversaturation. No doubt you're going to take it over with 147 books. Jesus. And who could collect that at $3 a pop, for example? You know, it's more than that. But let's say at $3 a pop. You know what I mean?
But it also means that Marvel is doing less per book than DC, if I'm not mistaken. So a DC book, makes more money than a Marvel book.
Yeah.
And it means more money to the creators, I hope.
No, yeah. It doesn't because you've on so many of the titles, it's something like a 60,000. It has to hit something like 60,000 before they pay royalties.
Mm-hmm.
So, and how many of those books sell 60,000?
Yeah, that's a problem.
So there isn't really any royalties being paid on the comics. There's something comes through on the trades. The DC beats Marvel on foreign editions.
On foreign editions, okay.
Yeah, because DC pays royalties on the foreign editions. Marvel doesn't.
Okay. Oh, what a difference, huh?
Wow, interesting.
That is.
Well, back when they were in bankruptcy, coming out of bankruptcy, they did a deal with Panini in the in Europe for their distribution and most of their books their books abroad.
Yeah.
Because Panini gave Marvel a big advance, a lot of money up front, and because Marvel were also at the time in almost bankruptcy, okay. They got a sweet deal, which basically meant they didn't actually have to pay royalties. So that meant there was no royalties for the creators.
Wow. All right. I'm over here being curious about stuff, right? So since we're talking about 93, you know, that's when Vertigo was born, right?
Yep.
I said, let's go back to 1993 for a second. April 1993. what was the comic book sales like then? Right? And then, does it give me the breakdown between publisher? No. But it shows me, obviously, the top 10, right?
Right.
In the top 10, we had, wow, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 DC books, no Marvel books, 1 Valiant book, 3 Image books.
Of course.
And then we finally get to a Marvel book by rank 18, which was X-Men Unlimited, that sold 500,000 copies, if you believe it.
Yeah.
And 93. I mean, I'm looking at these numbers from then. Adventures of Superman sold 3.4 million copies. Numbers I've heard of nowadays.
Yeah, but the question is, why are the Image books so high? Because it's the year after the Image, they found an Image.
Yes.
And they were still having 3 books in the number 10.
Yeah.
So basically, Image had managed to establish itself as the new big thing.
They did.
And they did something new. Of course, a lot of these books were influenced what these creators had done before. I mean, if you looked at Wildstorm, that was basically an X-Men book. Or yeah. Brigade, or whatever they put out, but they did it a little bit more into the zeitgeist, and they proved what we were talking about. The characters didn't matter as much as the creators matters, and Marvel and DC still want to push the line. No, the characters matter. No, but if you take Jim Lee out of DC, and Jim Lee would put out an Image book today, people would buy it. It wouldn't matter what characters are on the book, because still, Jim Lee still sells books. And if Jim Lee would put out, I don't know, a Wildstorm coming today under the Image banner, that would say it's a gangbusters.
Gosh. I did find the market share, guys. Check this out. DC then had 36%, Marvel only 26%, but Image is coming up. 17%. I haven't even seen them at this in the last few years, that high of a percentage.
No, they're about 10%, 10-11% today.
Yeah, but don't forget, like, so at that time, not only was it all of Marvel's top tier creators left.
All of them.
but they started new comics that looked just like the ones they were used to. But so there was no continuity baggage. You could buy, and now you're buying issue one. There's no baggage to it. It's like it was almost as, I think it was the closest thing that we got to the beginning of Marvel again.
Yeah.
When Marvel beat DC at their own game. And this was Image beating Marvel at their own game. Yeah. But they couldn't sustain it because, quite honestly, the creators weren't good enough.
No, they weren't. Let's go. I could take us now to 1993, December, right? Just to see what may have happened then, right? Marvel took back share by the end of the year at 35%, DC at 23%, and Image started going down at 10%. At that point in time, in the top 10, Marvel had two top 10 books. Image had 1, 2, 3. I'm sorry, Marvel had 2, Image had 3, and the rest belonged to DC. So DC still kind of had a nice sales, but Marvel started taking over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and but if you look at, let's look at what was happening at Image. So there was that period at the beginning where everything, like, if you slapped an Image logo on it, it was going to sell 500,000 copies at least. And it got to the point where, and because all the Image creators could bring their friends and offer them the same deal, so you had all these different houses. All of a sudden, Image is publishing, 40 titles.
Yeah.
And what happened was, I found was very interesting, is Image started to publish books that were selling maybe 150,000,
yeah,
or 200,000,
yep.
And the Jim Lee was still selling 750,000, the way 500,000, the way he was selling. So the core Image creators decided, that they were going to have a cutoff. If you were allowed to do an image book, and your sales dropped below 250,000, your book was going to be cancelled.
Oh damn!
So there was a lot of creators who had started a mini series, issue one, 350,000, issue two, 275,000, issue three, 250,000, issue four, 200,000. Well, after issue, that's it. Issue four is the last issue. That's it, man. You're canned. And there was a lot, and I know one, I mean, I'm not going to say his name, but there was one creator in particular who basically on the sales of their first issue, she decides, hey, I'm going to get a $1 million house.
Oh, damn.
Well, his book gets canceled after a couple of issues, and she spent all his money.
And done.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So it's, you know, there was, as I said, it's like they didn't have the structure, and they didn't have, they didn't have a Stan Lee.
No, they didn't. And
they didn't,
and
have
they didn't have, and they, did, and they didn't have a Sobrowski, because there was nobody making sure those books came out on time, because they had fractured into these different studios, and these books did not come out on time. And the retailers really got frustrated with them. Because if you have a delay of 2 months on a book, on a hot image title, and you already paid the publisher for these books, and the book's not coming in, and readers also lost interest.
It's not that they'd paid the publisher for it already. The problem is they had allocated that money. So they hadn't actually spent it yet. So if you're looking through a catalogue and you have a choice, let's see. Oh, this looks quite a good title, and this looks a great title. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to order 50 of that and 10 of that. Well, when it actually comes to that month, the book you thought was really good and you could probably sold more of, but you only went for 10 because you thought, no, I'm going to put my money in this 50 books over here. Those 10 issues come in and sell out in an instant. That other book that you'd put aside that money for didn't even show up. Mm-hmm. So you haven't spent the money, but you hadn't spent the money you had to have stock that's going to make you money.
Exactly.
There was a store in Brooklyn that if they were smart, they could have sold a lot because they were always over order on everything. but you're right. There was that decline, because if we look at the what is this? The December 2000 numbers. And now we're talking. Image has been out 7 years, right?
Right.
By their seventh year, they only had 6% of the overall market share. DC had 34, Marvel had 28, but Marvel had 8 books in the top 10. That's it, very same month.
But we're also beginning to enter that phase of Image where it wasn't about the core creators anymore. It was just,
in 2000,
here's a publishing company that will take your comic, not pay you anything for it, publish it for you, and then give you some money. That's the model. They don't promote it. They don't market it. They're just going to put their name on their logo on the top, and you've got your comic, and they're going to charge you $2,500 for it, and they take $2,500 off the top. So that's how
it works. Tough. Man, how have you survived so long in the game, Dave? Right, Chris is like,
I debate whether I've actually survived or not.
You're questioning yourself every morning.
Well, it's you see, the thing is, like, I entered getting into the business side of things in the mid 80s, and comics were definitely on the rise. There was independents were growing. There was, it was the beginning of creator-owned comics, really. I mean, that was when people were publishing them. Like, when Gary Leach and myself did A1, we were literally, I don't know of any other comic at that time that was paying page rates and giving 100% creator ownership to the creator.
What? Really?
Yeah. I mean, you'd have a lot of companies that would go, you know, even if you look at Warrior magazine from a few years earlier, Warrior was, it was a low page rate, but Warrior kept a percentage of the rights.
Okay.
And they had the right, they had the right to shop it around. They could do foreign editions of it. We had none of that. It was, we had one printing only. We never reprinted any of our books because we didn't have the rights to.
Gotcha.
So whatever that print, so whatever that print run was it. And we thought that that was the model that should be, because, you know, the books all made a profit, and the creators had got paid, and that was it. We just, like, that's it. Move on, do another book. And I think that there was that, and I still haven't, I still haven't seen a model, you know, no one's done that, because everyone will, like, the reason no one will do that is, like, they'll go like, well, that's crazy. How are we going to make our money? you know, we set out to be, you know, creators for creators.
Gotcha.
And that was, you know, kind of, I've counted myself as quite naive, very naive. In fact, I can remember when I was a little kid watching the Apollo moon landing, and I was absolutely convinced when I was like, you know, in my early teens, I was one of those people that thought we were going to have flying cars, jetpacks, and we were going to have, you know, I was going to go like, oh yeah, we're going to go to Mars for our vacation this year.
How awesome would that be?
It was, I really thought, like, I thought that the speed with which man got to the moon.
Yeah.
And I also thought it was for altruistic reasons. I thought we went to the moon for altruistic reasons. I didn't think it was, you know, it never occurred to me until years later that it was like, oh, that was an arms race. That was like, you know, that was
political.
It was political, but it was also an arms race, because it's also the weapons manufacturers. It's, you know, they're the same people that make all the rocket parts and stuff like that. And that was, they spent billions and billions of dollars. And for that time, in the 1960s, that was truly a monumental amount of money that got sucked out of the economy that in that period.
Jesus Christ.
So with comics, I thought that creator-owned comics was the way to go. I thought it was going to, I didn't think that Marvel and DC were going to go away, but I really thought that creator-owned comics was going to really flourish, be big. They were going to treat comic book creators just like, you know, big publishers treat Stephen King and at the time people like Clive Barker. So I was thinking like, yeah, that's the way to go.
Clive Barker, one of my favorite horror writers, brother, ever.
His early books, his short story books,
amazing. He's a beast, man. They're supposed to do a Nightbreed series, and he's supposed to be at the helm of it. So if they do that, I'll be very happy. But I would hope that they would call it what it was supposed to be called originally, Weave World.
I don't know if you ever saw it. Clive invited me. I saw he did a showing of the director's cut of Nightbreed in Los Angeles.
Saw that? With Clive.
It was about 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's when it was released.
Yep. Oh, he was there. He'd invited us along, and I mean, it still wasn't anywhere near as good as the book.
No, you're right.
It was superior to the original release of the film.
Yeah, I put so many people onto that Nightbreed movie. It's fantastic. It's fun. That's what I enjoy. And it was different for the time. You try to do things a little bit. I mean, I wish I could have gotten more sequels or, you know, more story out of it. One of my favorite stories was from the Epic line, since you had mentioned that, when they did have the rights to Hellraiser, and they did the Hellraiser versus Nightbreed, a story called Jihad, where Pinhead betrayed the Cenobites. Amazing yeah. story, man.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, see, I'm putting you on.
Well, I always thought Nightbreed was Clive Barker's version of the Inhumans.
Yeah, right? Oh, man, you know what? Yeah, dude, you could definitely see it that way, because it's just this whole other world, man.
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing world at that, with some very unique characters. I mean, everything that he did there was really awesome, and it's kind of sad that I didn't see anything new, you know, in my years, you know, happen up until now with the announcement of that possible series. Again, possible. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
I hope people can go back, look at Nightbreed, and see what's the potential of a TV show on this scale. I would love it.
Just go and read the book, Cabal.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So many good stuff, bro, to read. Yep. All right. So, guys, let's cause we've been here talking and chit-chatting. And all right. So, since I started with Dave, let's close with Chris. All right, Chris. You know, give us your eulogy to Vertigo and Mad, and if you can, you know, what do you think may be able to, if anything, replace this, or what would you like to see happen now that we lost these brands?
I think what I connect is Vertigo. Let's start with Vertigo first. Is that there were these characters, John Constantine and Swamp Thing, who had started in DC Universe, and then they got their own line. And there were other books, and it all felt like, as I said, they felt different. They felt like underground books. They felt like underground books from the 70s, not to the political bend that much, but they were also challenging stories, ideas, how you could tell a story. And this is something that is kind of missing today, and that's also why closing down Vertigo is only to solidify what we already see in the market, that these big corporate comic books or corporate comic book companies, they sort of have lost their way, and they are stuck in what they are. What we need today, it's something new, something fresh. And I remember when I was in comics, we talked about this, and reading comics in the 80s, and I got bored with Marvel because it was very streamlined under Shooter, and I got out of Marvel Comics. I discovered PC Comics, and they did this very original thing. They harked back to the 50s, of course, but they also were bold, they were adult. Excuse me. And this is something, if you want to move comics forward today, and you can also go back to heavy metal in the 80s, the epic line in the 80s. If there's still a market for comics, they cannot only be superheroes, they cannot only be IPs, there needs to be something new. What this new thing is, I have no idea. But if comics are to survive, in general, as a medium, you need something new, you need something fresh. This is what I hope we will find soon, because otherwise I see no future for comics.
And there goes Chris's thoughts. What about you, Dave?
I very much similar thoughts. Although I think that I'm not quite so jaded on the future of comics. I think that, you know, manga, and I think what's happening for young adult graphic novels,
mm-hmm.
is going to keep comics relevant. It's not in a way that, you know, a lot of the fans, the superhero fans, are going to like and enjoy, unless they mature.
Okay.
I think what's interesting is, you know, we're still on a transition period where, like, the comics are losing readership. They've always,
unfortunately,
they've been bleeding readership for a long time, but there's always been resurgence. And I think the manga readership is strong. A lot of the readers that came to Marvel, and particularly Marvel even more so than DC, but definitely to American comics, were a lot of the female readers that came, women readers, I believe came from manga, reading manga, and because they were in the same bookstore, started reading, picking up these books that were on the other side of the rack and getting interested in them as well. I think what's going to be the next wave of the future is going to be something that we're not seeing right now.
Gotcha.
I think just as Marvel came, no one thought that someone would come out and, you know, at that particular time and make the changes they did. It's going to be somebody doing something that just strikes at the right time by the right creative people. And if they do it right, it will stay around for a long time.
So basically, we hopefully will recognize it when it's there.
Yeah, hopefully they'll be doing something that we're all missing. Chris had mentioned about, was talking earlier about the, the digital format, the fact that the thing that we all have in common is we look at and we're getting entertainment and content from our cell phones, mobile phones. And if you ignore that tool of distribution, you're missing probably 80%, 90% of a potential audience. So I think that anything anybody does, it's going to be, somebody's going to do something in that format. I thought Webtoons was might have been it for a while.
Yeah, they're still trying to do things out there, but yeah.
But it's having the right content by the right people that gets discovered and is amplified by the right people.
Have that right mix, man. The magic going on.
The thing is, all it needs is one. Somebody wants one thing, and then everyone's going to want to find something like it because they, these comics are great. What else is there? And they're going to start looking.
Yep. Yeah, man. Let me tell you, for me, I'm sad to see where it could go, bro. Because I'm looking at titles like Preacher, Sandman, Why, The Last Man, which we didn't even mention. Fables.
But you see, the thing is, they all got to end properly.
Yeah.
The creators ended their books at the right time. We've not seen. We don't see that in corporate comics.
I mean, look at 100 Bullets, Transmetro. I mean, Scott Snyder got his start within Vertigo with American Vampire. And I have a friend, shout out to my boy Hans. He's all about American Vampire. He's been trying to convince me for years to read that one.
did that actually end?
Did it? I don't believe it did.
Scott Snyder wanted to go back to it. I think that he announced that half a year ago that he wanted to go back to it.
Yeah. There's still more because they've kept the end date open. So to me, it's still alive. And obviously, we had the Vertigo run of Animal Man. That was amazing. I mean, Kurt Busiek's Astro City, which is fire as well.
Yep.
Saucer Country, Paul Cornell. Damn, the Reef of Vendetta, the Losers. Come on. Oh, my God. Even Dead Man had a Vertigo run for a while. iZombie, which was on TV.
Soldier.
Oh, my God. Unknown Soldier, Spaceman, DMZ, House of Secrets, Angel and the Ape. I mean, Vertigo brought us so much juicy goodness, things that, didn't make us feel like a kid when we were reading. We were actually reading something mature, something with depth. And it's going to be missed. And with Mad is just the complete opposite. Something that used to be just so funny, hysterical, poking fun at life, everyday life, at politicians and movies, gone because we're in an age where everybody is sensitive everything's offensive.
I think the problem with Mad magazine is that it died so long ago.
It toned down, and that's when it started to die. Listening to social commentary. Oh, okay, maybe we shouldn't do that. No, guys, do it.
Do you know what? It feels to me like my own father, when he passed away, it had been quite a long, protracted death. Mm-hmm. And there was almost a sense of relief when he'd passed away, because he'd been through a lot and it'd taken a long time. And it's almost as though I feel with Mad Magazine, it's something similar in that, you know, you knew it was kind of out there, but it wasn't, you know, with Mad Magazine, I knew it was there.
Yeah.
But there was nothing about it that I wanted to maybe want to pick it up.
Understood. So it's just been buried a long time ago, as you had mentioned earlier.
Yeah. And it was like, finally. It's almost like, oh, finally, they've killed that.
But do you think, though, that it may have life on the internet?
I'm sure that, yeah, but how many times have we heard stories of like, oh, it's not dead, we're going to bring it back, we're going to do this with it, we're going to do that with it. Sure, they might do collections, and yes, there might be some expensive trades that be solicited for, but oh,
it was okay, expensive.
Yeah, well, there'll be expensive hardbacks, but oh,
I know. Oh, Omnibus is going for $1.20.
Right, but oh, look, they've cancelled the solicitation. Oh, they didn't get enough orders.
Yeah.
No, it's...
That drives me crazy when they do that. I get all excited sometimes for a certain release of a book, because I don't... Listen, there's a lot of stuff I want to read, and I can't sometimes buy them on issue format because, hey, I missed an issue. Next thing you know, that's the issue that's worth a lot of money, and I rather shell out, then, all right, I'll get the hardcover or whatever when it comes out, and those solicitations that get pulled back are going to kill me one of these days.
See, I'd go to Sergio Aragonés and say, hey, here's what we want you to do. Put together a 200-page Mad book a year. And you'll be the editor. You're going to do a ton of work for it. But you go out, you find the creative people to work on it. And it's hands off. It's like, whatever you give us, we'll publish.
So basically a year of Mad in one magazine every year.
Yep. One big book every year. And it's basically annual Mad. And,
I would do that. I would do that because it feels like you're part of something, a celebration. Oh, look, a new Mad once a year.
The thing is, you sign a contract with Sergio that says what happens is when he delivers it, it sees print, nothing censored, nothing's left. He can do whatever, and they have to let it go.
Yeah.
I mean, they won't do that, but...
No, they won't.
But if they did that, you see, what you would do is you would have something that people would be waiting for.
Yes, absolutely.
And that might be... And in the meantime, while you're waiting for it, oh, I'll buy that collection. Oh, I'll buy that Mad T-shirt. Oh, look, they put that. Oh, that was one of my favorite issues. Look, they put that on a T-shirt. Oh, I'll buy that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you watch. And if you did that and you built it up slowly, you could make them. The logo would be back out there on T-shirts again. You could get maybe a little boutique, thing going. A Mad little when DC talks about its pop up shops.
Yeah,
do a Mad pop up shop. As long as it makes a profit, keep it going, and let someone like Sergio at the helm, and he's someone who's been with it for so long. Just give it to him.
Yeah. Do you think that maybe Mad has life on TV, like the old school TV series that was out? The comedy series? No.
That was horrible.
I mean, it lasted from 1995 to 2009. That's 14 seasons. The best seasons were probably the first two or three to me.
Surprising.
But you see, they just took it was Warner owns it and it's called Mad TV.
Let's take the name, right? That's it.
That was kind of it, really, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, they did try to show animated Spy versus Spy.
Yeah.
They tried. They made an attempt. It just didn't go the right way that they had expected it to. They did, like I said, it was the earlier seasons that were the best ones. And I mean, here it's telling me after 2016, they try to bring it back.
Yeah.
No, stop it. And I'm looking at that crew they try to bring it back with. No, guys, stop it. Ari Spears is probably the best one out of that whole crew. Anyway, yeah. So with that, yeah, Mad is gone. Vertigo is leaving us. And with that, of course, you know, we left out the, you know, Kid Inc. I mean, the DC Inc., DC Zoom. But that's going to be translated into DC Kids, apparently, for 13 and under. DC Regular is going to be for us, you know, regular fans of superhero comics, and then Black Label for the adults. So that one comment that Dan did where he goes, oh, we're trying to put it under one umbrella, but you're still doing three separate labels.
Yeah, no, it's, you see, it's, to me, DC meant Superman, Batman, Justice League, or, you know, Wonder Woman, etc. And Vertigo meant, oh, you know, it was Swamp Thing, it was Preacher, it was, you know, 100 Bullets. And
100 Bullets is a monster. Oh, what a great book.
It is. But again, what we've lost that, because basically in every single one of these imprints, it's Batman and Superman again.
Yeah,
Batman's Batman, Harley Quinn, everywhere.
Yeah, Harley Quinn, because Jim Lee did say that Harley Quinn is now the fourth pillar of DC.
Amazing.
But you see,
I just heard Dave rolled his eyes. I saw it through my microphone.
Yeah,
But you see, the thing is, though, it's the merchandise. Like, you know, I can go into almost any shop that sells T-shirts, and there'll be a Harley Quinn T-shirt in there.
Absolutely. Harley shorts, Harley tops, Harley bottoms, underwears, yep. Everything. Definitely pushing towards the female audience. This very naughty girl.
Yeah. And that's the way they played the character. It's not, she's not evil anymore. It's just, she's a naughty girl.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, come on. They're Harley's little black book. I mean, if they're talking about they don't want to push buttons, but she's basically boning half of DC. Come on, man. Stop it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like, I mean, in fact, considering that Jimmy and Amanda have been, you know, have basically, it's like when I think, you know, I know Paul Dini and Bruce Timm created Harley Quinn, but when I think of Harley Quinn these days, I just think of Jimmy Palmiotti and
Amanda Connor. Amanda Connor. Thank you.
Yeah.
Dude. Somebody had insulted them in a way. DC had put out some blast. Oh, man, we're finally going to have a Harley book written by a woman. Jimmy went right quick. Don't forget that the half of this creative team that was working on Harley was a female. Amanda Connor also has been writing her.
Yeah.
So stop with this nonsense of giving somebody else the credit. And that's why I love Jimmy won't stay quiet, man. When something's wrong, he's the first one to say something. So yeah, shout out to Jimmy Palmiotti, man.
And the thing is, just because they say Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor, that doesn't automatically mean that Jim is doing all the writing and Amanda's doing all the art.
They're a royal couple in the comic verse, that's for sure.
Oh, they are very much. But it's funny because I what I was just leading on to say is that what would be funny is to have a Harley Quinn the pro crossover.
Oh my god. I don't think too many people could handle the pro. I know that story, and I had posted at my former YouTube channel. Thank you, YouTube, for taking it away for no reason. I had posted a short of the pro. Oh my god, people are like, where can I find the rest of this? We should see something like that. Why not? Yeah. Why not? It would be a hell of fun. Again, see, making comics fun again.
Yeah.
No, and I'm not trying to trump it. I'm just saying make comics fun again. Oh, man. So, guys, man, this is awesome. Awesome little chat, man, about Vertigo, about Mad, about comics, about what we love, what we will miss, and hopefully what is to come will be able to, you know, give us something to not make us feel as sad in losing these two. So Vertigo, 1993 to 2019. Thank you. And to Mad Magazine, what was it, 1952 I had mentioned earlier?
Yeah, that's true.
To 2019, 67 years old. May you both rest in peace. And thank you for the wonderful entertainment.
Can I just say one last thing?
Go ahead.
I think what makes it so hard when you think about, like, oh, yeah, we're losing these great two, like, oh, Mad Magazine, Vertigo.
Yeah.
I think what we're not seeing them replaced by anything.
No, yeah, exactly.
That's a problem.
If Mad Magazine, it would be easier to go. It's like, oh yeah, but I, you know, it's like, oh yeah, I'd still buy the odd issue of Mad, but there was this other comics satire magazine that was so much funnier and so much more cutting edge. I'm always buying that every month, but I still buy the odd issue of Mad. No, there is no other one to buy. And, you know, it's with Vertigo going, I know they're going to suck it all into Black Label and stuff like this, but, you know, there's a lot of type of material that we're just not going to see again that we would have done. And and there is no other home, really. So it's,
yeah. Well, wait. Before we do go, I do want to mention this, that with the announcement of Mad, you know, closing down, you remember Marvel had a little magazine back in the day trying to challenge Mad, and it was called Crazy.
Well, they're doing a one-shot.
Yeah, and they're hoping that if it sells well, that they may do that on a continuing basis. So let's see.
We'll see.
Exactly, we'll see. But for me, they're, you know, Mad, Crazy, whatever. Mad can't be replaced, man. All right? And that's done. So with that, guys, thank you so much for your time today. We were here for almost 2 hours chit-chatting. So I hope, folks, you got a lot of you got questions, concerns. You want to chime in, please do comment on the bottom of our post. Comment to us on Twitter. Check out Dave where?
On Twitter, Dave Elliott.
That's D-double-E-V, Elliott. And for yep. Chris, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter. That's under Buse_Chris. And you can find me also on Instagram.
And there you go.
And you can find me, of course, on Comic Crusaders every Wednesday with my column.
Wepa! We have a great one coming out this Wednesday, so I can't wait. And with that, fellas, from across the pond, thank you so much. I'm Al Mega with my boys Dave and Chris. Thank you for listening to this episode of International Comic Community Collective. And we're out of here today. Yeah, man. Thank you so much, everybody. Bless.
Bye-bye.
See you, man.
Thank you. This is an official Undercover Capes podcast.
Thank you for listening to the ICC and Undercover Capes. Make sure to visit our website, undercovercapes.com, and also visit the International Comics Collective on Twitter.